It's our pleasure today to be talking with Christian Schlafer. Mr. Schlafer is seeking the Republican Party nomination as a candidate to represent the 4th District of Iowa in the United States House of Representatives. Christian Schlafer emphasizes his roots as a farmer and businessman and his passion for Iowa's communities. He characterizes himself as a farmer and working man who wants to restore the small-town America that was built by Main Street and the church. Schlafer has business experience in the financial, pharmaceutical, and software industries. He has degrees in business and political science. Schlafer raises sheep on his family's homestead, where he and his wife built their home with their own hands. He leads in his local community as a firefighter and guest preacher. Schlafer has called for an immediate debate. There are 5 candidates in this race for the Republican nomination, and that's too many, he says. Rather than wasting time and money of everyday Iowans, I ask that they join me in debate and let the people, not the political consultants, decide who can best carry their voice to Washington. Christian, tell our listeners something about yourself that they'll not find on your website or with a search engine.
Well, that's a really good summary there. Thank you so much for having me here today. One thing that's interesting about me that is not in that biography you just listed is that my father is actually a public servant. So he works for the government, and just like the military, every 2 or so years, he'd get posted to a new assignment. And so for me growing up, during a lot of periods of my life, I'd get drunk along with him, spend a lot of times with military kids on those military bases and moving around. And so I did have some great opportunities to see a lot of parts of the country and even the world. And that's really informed my understanding and my love for our communities here in Iowa. I've seen the alternative that a lot of places offer, and I know how much there is for us to lose and how much there is for us to love and preserve about this place.
Well, as you talk with people around the district, what are their most frequent concerns?
And I've had a lot of conversation with constituents over the last several weeks. Obviously, in this last week, we had some tragedies going on with Charlie Kirk and these other incidents. And so that's really dominated the conversations had this last week. This is something that's meant a lot to an incredible amount of people. And they're very concerned about polarization and some of the forces that are perhaps promoting that type of violence in this country. As far as local issues, big ones we hear are obviously agriculture, right? We're here in the 4th District. That's always going to be a primary concern, as it should be, as well as specific issues within that. Things like eminent domain come up, and that's something that continues to be at the top of people's lists as far as the things that they're most concerned about in their own backyards.
To follow up on that eminent domain thing, do you have a particular position there that you would advocate, or are you just simply listening to see what the constituents have to say about it?
No, I do have a particular position, so I'm not in favor of the use of eminent domain. And I say that particularly when we talk about this issue about eminent domain, because people often ask, well, what about the carbon pipelines as a whole? And I think we have to really break this down. One of the reasons the carbon pipelines are happening is that these interplay with the ethanol industry. And obviously, it's in a very important industry in Iowa. And it's one of the reasons that people are so nervous to talk about this issue, because they're scared of disrupting ethanol. And I understand that, and I respect that. And I do think we need to be very careful to make sure our energy industries continue to thrive. Yet at the same time, I don't believe that using eminent domain against people's private property for what is public gain, what is not something that all of the private gain, something that all of the public is able to use, is right. And, you know, there's a couple of things there. This affects me directly. So we live in Lakota, and we have an ethanol plant there. And that pipeline will go directly through my property. So you mentioned earlier, right, my wife and I, we built our own house. That was a couple years ago. That was just a cornfield out there. And now we've raised this structure with our own 2 hands. And so the premise that the government can come in and they can, by force of arms, say, we're going to start digging in your backyard, and there's nothing you can do about that. And it doesn't matter if you work endless amount of hours, and we continue to, because if anybody's ever, if anybody lives on a farm or has built their own house, they know that that never really ends. For somebody to step in and tell us what we can and can't do with that property, I find that to be a real moral issue. Mm-hmm. And I'm very worried about what that opens up in the future. Mm-hmm. If you can use eminent domain on this scale right now, what projects come down the road where now you have a precedent that says, well, we'll just use this for everything, regardless of where it's at? I think if we continue that conversation, we circle it back, though. Well, what about the ethanol industry? What about the implications? And I think there's some things we can do to address the underlying issues. One of the biggest ones is being able to sell Iowan ethanol into places like California or other states that have adopted California regulations related to clean energy. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, I believe that these regulations are violations that I believe the federal government it has the authority to regulate interstate commerce. Mm-hmm. I believe states shouldn't be doing that with their effective regulations. And that's what these regulations do. California, they get a waiver under the Clean Air Act that allows them to put more stringent regulations on energy sources. Mm-hmm. And as a result, that's an effective regulation of other states. And there has been litigation about this, and there's ongoing litigation about this. But I do believe that's an area where Congress should step in, and they should clarify these rules, and they should make sure that those waivers, yes, they can be used internal to California, you know, per their waivers, but they shouldn't be used to tell Iowans what they can do with their products or what they can do with their energy.
So that's kind of like the issue with hog confinements, isn't it? In the birthing chambers, I don't recall the exact
That's
term
right.
for that.
That's exactly
the
right.
Same sort of thing.
Right, exactly. So the hog gestation and the space that they need inside of those pens, mm-hmm. you know, that's another very similar issue. California is placing restrictions on that, saying that we need more square foot, and the restrictions that they're placing are basically unfeasible. If you look at the amount of entities that have been able to adopt those, it is a very small percentage. It's not economically feasible. And that's a great another case where, look, internally to California, if they want to vote on that and they want to put those restrictions on their own production internal to the state, well, they can go ahead and do that. But it is the federal government, not California, that gets to decide interstate commerce regulation. And they shouldn't be able to apply their standards to Iowa and tell Iowans how to produce their hogs. This is our one of our biggest exports here. We're obviously producing more than anywhere else in the country. So why are these other states able to tell us how to do that, right? Of all the people who know how to do it, it's Iowans.
It's also connected to the water quality issue. Have you thought about that and what might be done?
Yeah, so the water quality issue we're talking about there is nitrates and other runoff and off water. And uh-huh. this has become a very big political issue, actually quite recently, kind of growing in public concern, especially down here in this area where we're at right now, Des Moines area, kind of greater Des Moines area, based on water testing that was done recently. Now, I think this is something that we should be mindful of, right? Obviously, these elevated levels, we need to be tracking this. We need to be monitoring this. However, I do not want to see the government placing mandatory conservation restrictions or things like that on farmers that are going to disrupt their ability to do their farming. And I think that's my real concern as we hear about this, is there are some proposals for additional mandatory restrictions, conservation efforts, controls. And historically, that's not what we've done. Historically, we've left it up to farmers to manage their own conservation practices, and the government has given them excellent guidance and excellent studies and excellent understanding of how they can go about using that. And farmers have historically complied with those things because in the aggregate, in the long term, they see better yields off their field. They want their fields to be healthy. They are the stewards of those lands, and nobody cares more about that land than the farmer themselves. Actually, if we go back in history and we look at the early part of this country, this is something that our founding fathers were already focused on. They knew, a peculiarity of the United States was, think about when we first had the colonies, right? We had 13 colonies. We had this whole country out west. And so you had this interesting thing happen where people would farm the land. And then once they really used up that land and it was stripped of nutrients, or they had other conservation type issues, well, they just moved further west because there was unlimited land. And our founding fathers, as early as the beginning of this country, they recognized that was a problem and that we needed proper conservation efforts. And so they went ahead and they produced a lot of material, and they instructed farmers on how they could better conserve that land. And what we saw is that farmers did that. And that's been the course of our country since then. They adopted proper conservation. And so as we deal with these issues, I think we do need to monitor them. We do need to be aware of them, but I do not want to see additional enforced regulations put against farmers. I think that's something that we should not move towards.
So you would oppose that sort of?
I would strongly oppose that, yeah.
I see. Okay. Do you have a position with regard to gun control?
I do. So I'm actually very strongly pro Second Amendment. I am a strong supporter of the Second Amendment. And from a legislative aspect, I believe that there are things that the government should be doing actually to make our Second Amendment more accessible. And these aren't things that, these are just things that make sure individuals preserve their rights. So national reciprocity. That means that if I have a firearm that the state of Iowa allows me to have, and I cross into Minnesota. Right now, if I do that, I drive across the border, and, you know, 4th District borders a lot of Minnesota. You get pulled over, a cop sees you have that gun on you, and there's a good chance you might be going to jail. Does that make any sense, right? The Second Amendment is a constitutional issue. Why is it that crossing an arbitrary state line where maybe there's a sign that says welcome to Minnesota, but probably there's not on most of our roads, right? And yet crossing that boundary makes someone that is a law-abiding citizen just trying to protect themselves now potentially on their way to jail. I think that makes no sense at all. So there's several areas like that, national reciprocity, safe hearing acts, there's devices that can help protect people's ears that are banned kind of just because of, you know, things like suppressors, right? They have been banned because of, what would you say, political fear, when really there's no basis for that when you actually look at firearm crimes, things as well like short-barreled rifles. This is, again, a political fear about a concealable firearm. But if you know anything about the firearms that are out there, this is basically a non-issue anymore. The firearm industry has changed. The type of firearms that are produced are changed. And those regulations, they don't do anything except just make it more difficult for law-abiding citizens who are trying to practice their Second Amendment rights to go ahead and have, you know, a reasonable firearm. You talk about that. We talk about this in context of the recent shootings, which are tragedies, right? And I do think political rhetoric that kind of leads us there. And then you see this reaction by certain elements of the media. They try to blame this on guns, right? Oh, this is a continuation of our gun violence. I think that's absolutely nonsense. And if you look at this particular case, this was a hunting rifle, right? A bolt action hunting rifle, a type of rifle that's been around at this point for, you know, over 100 years, right? You can find these rifles. So if you're telling me that you want common sense gun legislation that's going to address this most recent shooting, what you're telling me is that you want confiscation of all firearms, because that is a very old, very basic firearm. So how are you going to address that in legislation unless you're just telling the American people that they don't get to have guns anymore? Okay. And so that's when people try to link those two together, I think that they are being slightly disingenuous in their argument.
National minimum wage. Should we have one?
I definitely don't think we should a nationalized minimum wage. Sure. Yeah, I don't think we should have a nationalized minimum wage. I think that obviously cost of living is radically different between different places, and not just cost of living, but various economic metrics. If we look here in the 4th District, we are so different than a place like California, right? We look at real wages earned, but also other economic markers about the cost of property here, right? Mm-hmm. So we have smaller houses than they do in a lot of places, but our houses are significantly cheaper than they are if you look at median household costs. So to try to nationalize a metric like that, I think would be a huge mistake, and I think that would tremendously hurt people here in Iowa, because what would happen is it wouldn't be nationalized relative to our economy. It'd be nationalized relative to a place like California, and I think business owners here in Iowa would never be able to actually pay that out. So I think that the way to increase wages for individuals is good fiscal policy as a nation, and it is continuing to develop our economies here. We talk about the Main Street and the church, right? That's the economic front, and then our moral front as individuals in our society and our relationship with that society. And if we develop our economy here, if we increase manufacturing in our rural areas, if we restore our small towns, all of those things will see real wages increase for individuals without yet another government program stepping in and putting an artificial economy on things. And then we all see the effects of those type of things in the long term.
Thank you very much for coming today. We really appreciate it here. We've been talking with Christian Schlafer, who's a candidate for the Republican nomination to become the 4th District Congressman here in Iowa.